Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carrie Adloyd. How do we grieve for someone? How does it change and evolve as we get older? My dad died when I was 15, and it took me many, many years to be able to express what I had gone through. So I decided to create Griefcast, a chance to talk, share and laugh about the weirdness of grief and death. But with comedians, so it's not that depressing, I promise. Each time I talk to a different comedian about their own personal experience of grief, as we remember someone that they have lost along the way. Whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club, this is a chance to talk about the peculiar human process of death. Welcome to Griefcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Griefsters. Guess what? I hope you're having an okay week. Is that becoming another catchphrase? It's every week. I'm like, I hope you're having an okay week, and you remember you're not alone. I always feel a bit weird about having catchphrases for a show about death. I hope it's all right. I hope you're having a fine time. Anyway, just a reminder, we have a live show coming up on June the 6th. Confirmed guests is Jeff Lloyd from the incredible Adrift. I was going to say Afterlife. Adrift podcast and Reasons to be Cheerful. And Camille Gucan from Lee and Dean and Birthday Girls, another very funny lady. And there will be another guest as well when I can confirm who that's going to be. Head to the Udderbelly website for tickets, or I will tweet the link as well at the Griefcast. This week I'm talking to writer Paul Burke. Paul is a copywriter as well as a novelist. He's written 4 novels and a million different adverts that you've definitely heard and watched for many, many years. He's also a genuinely wonderful person. Paul came in to talk to me about his parents. Welcome to Griefcast. I'm joined today by copywriter, author, man about town, and radio expert. That's what I'm going to go for. Paul Burke. Hello.
Hello, Carrie.
How's that? Is that okay?
Oh, that's so rewarding.
How long have you been writing radio adverts for?
I started as a van driver.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I left school with practically nothing. And I started as a van driver just to get a job.
Yeah.
My ambition at that age, the zenith of my ambitions, was to be a black cab driver.
Oh, wow.
You won't be surprised to
yeah.
know.
Yeah. And, but, you've made a great cab driver for
trouble is that you have to sit still so long.
Yeah, that's true. And,
you know, when you see me with black cab drivers, I do say, yeah, my boy had trials for West Ham too. You know, I do behave like that. But I joined an advertising agency, not realising really what it was, and It was just a really cool place to be, if that's not too uncool a thing to say.
No, I can imagine. And, so was that in the 80s?
It was in the 80s, yeah.
That was like the height of advertising, wasn't it? It's like my friend used to say, you know, if you did an advert, you could buy a house.
Well,
like it was just...
I think by the time I got there, that had sort of faded away.
But, oh, damn it.
I mean, the way it started is, I don't know how you got into what you're doing, but we had a careers convention at school.
Oh, right, yeah.
And I wanted to be a journalist.
Right.
And this bloke came around from the local paper. I think it was the Wembley Observer or the Kilburn Times. And he goes, "Well, I've been at the Wembley Observer now for 37 years and I feel part of the community." You thought, "Oh, really?" And then the line I'll never forget, he goes, "I've covered their weddings, I've covered their children's weddings." I thought, really?
Not exactly exciting,
no,
dynamic
at all.
World of journalism.
And this bloke came round from an advertising agent. I don't know who he was or what he was doing in my school. He seemed really old, he's probably about 28. I don't know, somebody's friend's brother or something.
Yeah.
And he just, I think as a nation in the 80s, we'd all heard of Saatchi and Saatchi.
Yeah.
And he said, "No, there's lots of these advertising agencies." Then he said the golden rule. You don't necessarily need any qualifications. Ting! And so I looked them up. And wow. I swear I'm making this up. The first one in the book was Abbott Mead Vickers,
right.
Which at the time was very small.
Yeah.
Now it's the biggest agency in Britain, has been for a long time. And I just went along and said I'd like to work in advertising. I wasn't being sort of cool or cocky.
Yeah, yeah.
And they just happened to be looking for a runner, so I just used to drive a van.
Different times, isn't it? It's such different times.
It's so different. I mean, people have said, "Oh, you must have been really driven. You know, you must have."
Yeah.
No, the van was driven. It was. But you must have wanted to get in at the bottom so you could make it. And no, it was just a job. I was just biding my time till I was 21 and could do the knowledge.
And then you started specialising in comedy and working with, like you said, all those 1980s comedy greats.
Oh,
like,
gotcha.
Go and list the people you've worked with.
People I've actually written material for. When I say material, it's commercials. First and foremost, Carrie Ad Lloyd, Rowan Atkinson, Fry and Laurie, Mitchell and Webb, Rob Brydon, Ben Elton once. I'm trying to think of Justin Morehouse, all these comedy people. But then I think the reason I like radio is it's the nearest you get in advertising to show business, because although television's glamorous, I used to do ads with older listeners will remember in the 90s there was lots of ads for Barclaycard with Rowan Atkinson.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then they became Johnny English. Well, I used to do those.
Oh, wow.
And used to go all around the world.
Yeah.
But it is a bit boring when you're actually shooting them.
Yeah.
You know, just the amount of setup, just the cameras, you know, you have to set up the cameras and you've got to do exactly the same for a 30-second ad as you would for a two-hour movie.
Yeah.
And I've got no attention span. Whereas radio, it's sort of done and dusted in about an hour.
Yeah,
and
it's very immediate, isn't it?
It's great. And many's the time that I've seen someone on the telly or in a play, and it's quite easy to find out who their agent is. Next job I've got, I thought that bloke who played the vicar would be good for that. And the bloke who played the vicar, the bloke I saw on the telly, is in the studio the following Thursday reading out something I've written. And that's glorious.
Yes, yeah, it's so quick, isn't it? It reminds me, that's like what attracted me to improv and, you know, character stand-up and stand-up was just like, I've got an idea on a Thursday. On the Friday, I ask my friend to go on their gig and then I do it and I go, oh, that idea sort of works. It's not, like, it's just, I think if you have no patience, it's a really nice way to work.
I think patience is an overrated virtue.
I definitely will subscribe to that school because I have no patience at all.
I'm getting worse. I mean, despite my advance in years, you've never seen a boy racer like me. Honestly, I remember somebody, it was an engineer in a studio, he goes, "Oh, what was it? Were you in, I'm making this up, were you in Cricklewood on Thursday, on Saturday at the weekend?" I said, "Yeah. Have you got a red Golf?" Whatever it was. I said, "Yeah." He goes, "You bastard." Apparently I'd cut him up. And it's a weird thing because I'm not competitive or macho when I drive a car.
Yeah.
I just want to get there.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I find slow drivers, you will wait for me.
Yeah.
No, I don't care. So... And also, as my life is ebbing away, I've got less of it.
You've got to get there quick.
I've got stuff to do. You know, I'll be dead soon.
I think maybe that's what my lack of patience is. Just like, life's too short. Come on.
It's going to get worse.
You're
either like that, you know.
Oh, God, yeah. I have no patience at all. So, Paul.
Yes.
Who are we remembering today?
We're remembering my dad and my mum.
Mum and your dad. So, who died first?
My dad.
Your dad. And how long ago did your dad die?
Well, this is a really... My dad died several years before I was born. Now, how can that possibly be? What happened was, years before I was born, we're talking about 1959, 1960, my dad was, you know, quite young, in his 30s, and he had appendicitis, and it went really bad. You know how it can.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's peritonitis.
Yeah.
And it all exploded. And he's rushed into Willesden General Hospital. And he's actually, like, technically dead on the operating table.
Oh, my God.
So he's dead. But it's not primitive in those days. They got the electric shock, the old jump leads out. Ka-chunk, ka-chunk, and jump leaded him back to life.
Wow.
So, but what they said, again, I wasn't there. It's before I was born. Is that in later life, because they, you know, whacked electricity, thousands of volts through him, that it may cause issues with his... Well, people have said issues. Nobody said that in those days. They may cause problems or damage to his heart in later life.
Oh, wow.
And again, many years after this, by which time he'd fathered another couple of children, and I was nine, he had a massive heart attack. And still not, you know, in his 40s.
God.
We were on holiday. We used to go down to my... both my parents came from big families. And my mum came from this... big, you know, those sort of London families that don't exist anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
There were nine of them. And my Uncle Bert was, it's that sort of, if you like, Derek Jameson, Max Bygraves, those old Londoners. They're all like that. And my Uncle Bert had moved down to Littlehampton and we were down there. And we were going down to the beach and we said to me, Dad, you know, UK, it wasn't like him because he was a thick-set Irish builder. And I'm looking increasingly like that. And he wasn't a hypochondriac, but the opposite. And he goes, no, I'm not feeling so good. And when we came back, I remember I just ran to see if he was all right. I'm about nine. And I just remember his head seemed to be the size and colour of an aubergine.
Oh, my God.
And I went scuttling off, Mum, you know. And he's still gamely smiling. I'm all right, son, I'm all right. And I don't think he could see himself.
Yeah, yeah.
And I called an ambulance, you know, massive heart attack. And we had to come home. And he was still down there for about a month.
Oh, my God.
In hospital. And that led to him being off work for 3 or 4 years.
Wow.
And we weren't, to put it mildly, weren't very wealthy in the first place.
Yeah.
And this plunged us into, like, Monty Python-style poverty.
Wow.
That said, it was, you know, I wasn't unhappy. People were so kind, you know. We used to get our clothes in a bin bag from the St. Vincent de Paul Society because my dad, not so much my mum, but my dad was the most devout Catholic you will ever meet.
Wow.
So the church were really good to us. We lived on benefits because he simply couldn't work. And when I hear people talking about their poor childhood and they'll say, my dad drove this ropey old Ford Anglia. What, your dad had a car?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah, he didn't sort of die there and then, but he was off work for 3 or 4 years. Then he'd go back, but he was never the same again.
Yeah.
And because of that, because I'm thinking about it now, it wasn't very nice that you're a little boy. I'm not trying to get the violins out. And I lived under the constant fear that my dad was going to die.
Yeah, especially being young and having sickness in the house, I think can be really challenging because you don't really know what's going on, right? And especially in that day and age, I imagine no one really explained to you what was going on.
No, he wasn't well.
Your dad's not well.
I mean, again, because my mum was, think the nan from the Catherine Tate Show, but at that time she was younger. And just the choice of phrase, my dad was called Patrick, because I'm Irish. As Pat, he's queer. it was all right, yes, he turned queer in the night. It was just... or the other one, my dad was on the sick. On the sick sounded terribly slippery, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, it affected us in many ways. I think to this day, I loved my dad. He was... Because people think the Irish are sort of roistering, drunk... and a lot of them are, but most of them aren't. A lot of them are sort of, there's that sort of, you know, White House does that. I've written for him as well.
Yeah.
Paul White has that Ted and Ralph.
Oh, yeah, that sort of
a
like.
A lot of Irish people, that's quite well observed, are like Ted.
Yeah.
I'm not saying my dad was like Ted, but he was more like that, sort of quiet, devout. He used to be a monk, my dad.
Oh, my God.
An actual monk. He was a Cistercian monk in Ireland. Obviously, he didn't take his final vows, or this programme would not be going out.
So he was sick for quite a while.
Yeah.
And then, so how old were you when he died? What happened when he died?
I was 31 when he died. So, I mean, wow. Oh, my God.
He did well then.
He did so. He was the original creaking door hangs long.
Oh, my God.
He was, he never malingered. The moment he was okay, he would go back to work.
Wow.
But when I think about him, and he was lovely, a bit, you know, sort of Irish and humble. I loved him. I love him to this day. But I didn't really respect him because he was such a devout Catholic. Yeah. As I got older, I used to think, I didn't say it out loud because he was really nice. I didn't want to fall out with him. What do you know? You know, you believe a virgin gave birth to a child. You know, you believe a man rose from the dead. You know, and also, because he was physically frail is probably the wrong word, but sort of diminished.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't, you know, I didn't play football with him in the park. I didn't do anything like that. So, yeah, it's a horrible thing to say I didn't respect him. I loved him, but when I got to about 16, 17, I started working in a cinema. And I wrote a book about it. And we used to, there's no other way of putting it, we used to steal a lot of money from the cinema.
Right, okay.
I would come in, I mean, I know you're young, but tickets used to come out in a strip.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You'd fold them and give you back two ticket stubs. Yeah. What we would do so fast you wouldn't see it is I'd put one in my pocket, then take the untorn ticket back to the cash desk and resell it. Now, on a Saturday night, you'd get 1,000, 1,200. But you had to do that about 15 times.
Yeah.
Then the Coke cups. You know those waxy red
Coke
and Pepsi cups? Say there was 100 to start with, and there was 50 at the end of the night, you should have the money in the till for 50 Coke cups. We'd just go around the cinema, around the foyer, wash them all up and put them back. And there was no, you know, there was nothing. The till was just a draw.
Yeah, it was
and
just a draw.
The third, this troika of theft, the third one was simply overcharging people. You'd come in and go, 20 Rothmans, because people used to smoke in cinemas in those days.
Yeah.
20 Rothmans, bag of popcorn, couple of Cokes. And you'd add it up in your head, say it was 163. You'd go, 168, please. No one's going to go, oh, excuse me.
Yeah,
so, I mean, I had a big red Ford Cortina when I was at school.
Which so, your devout Catholic dad might have had some issues.
Well, my mum knew damn well.
Yeah.
But also, going back to cars, weirdly, that altered not the balance of power, that would be the wrong way of putting it, but altered things in my household because my parents had never had a car.
Wow.
And suddenly I had one. And you know, I didn't use it, but I could take them. Suddenly I was the adult.
Because
I passed my test when I was 17.
And a different time when people were going, like, my mum left school at 15 and got a job, and that was it. She was an adult. She was paying her parents' money, because they didn't have any money. So she was sent to work.
Quite.
Yeah, it's very different.
And as long as
dynamic.
Exactly that. And the trouble is, the people from around my way, I think Mickey Flanagan's touched on this, is you leave school, you get a job, you get a council flat, you get a bird, you get married, you're 21, you're done. And I'm not saying that would have happened to me, but working in advertising, sort of, I suddenly thought, oh my God.
There's another way.
Wow, look at this. Yeah. You know, cool. But the way I describe the creative people in advertising agencies, they were like cool older brothers.
Yeah.
You know, I'm 18, they're about 30. And they were that long haired sort of generation.
Yeah,
And they they'd been to art college or they were good writers because in those days there were grammar schools.
Yeah.
So you get working class people. You know, the best example are the Beatles or the Kinks or the Who or anyone. You know, they had the full spectrum of a grammar school where they were educated well. And also the people that wrote things like Steptoe and Son. That's why there's no working class comedies anymore. Like EastEnders is hideously unconvincing because it's written by middle class people.
So it's
all sort of wrong.
So you were 31 when he died. So what did he, was it his heart eventually?
Yeah, it was his heart. I mean, he'd be absolutely, when I say absolutely fine, he was on tablets for the rest of his life and he never really got better.
Yeah.
And weirdly, my cousin, because the family were Irish, but they came over to Scotland, like Irish people did. By which time my dad was already about 14.
Right, okay.
But he was the third of about, oh God, I don't know how many there were, about eight of them. I mean, they were so poor, you know.
Yeah.
If they could get to, you know, 5 o'clock without getting polio, that was a good day for them. I mean, so the younger ones were like babies, so they all settled in Scotland.
Right, okay.
And I remember going to Scotland when I was about six. We went up there on the train and we stayed with my dad's sister. And there's a picture of my dad. I only saw it recently. He transferred it onto DVD, my cousin had. And there was a picture of my dad playing cricket with a tennis ball in the back garden. And I saw him sort of running up and down. And I remember him doing that.
Wow.
You know, and he was quite trim and handsome
before,
in an Irish sort of way.
Yeah,
And So,
well, I guess
yeah.
it's like you said, like medicine in those days was so like a big blunt knife, wasn't it? Because like, yeah, it does the job, he survived, but it obviously kind of destroyed some other stuff.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, but then allowed him to live at the
yes,
same time.
And allowed me to exist
yeah.
and my sister Caroline.
God, that's amazing,
and Sue's nothing. I'm not sure if my sisters. I've got four sisters.
Right. Okay.
I'm not sure if Susan was alive, but Caroline and I certainly weren't.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I only exist because of the heart damage, and that's a really weird thing.
And where were you? Did you get a phone call? Was he sick already? Or?
Oh, he was always. I mean, you become sort of immune to it.
Yeah.
And we were very well looked after. I mean, I remember Caroline and I got sent to. Wembley Arena or Wembley Empire Pool, as it was then, to see Disney on Parade. And you know, we were about 10 and Caroline was about 7. And we got there and we got sweets and Coke
yeah.
and this lovely sticker book. And everyone wanted to see, it was a massive thing. Everyone around our way wanted to go to Wembley and see Disney on Parade, all the Disney characters. So there was no Disneyland. There probably was, but we yeah. didn't go to things like, nobody did. And I remember saying, oh, it's brilliant, you've got to go. You get this sticker book and they give you free sweets. And people in my class said, no, they don't, we didn't go. And then I had to bring it in to show people.
Oh,
and I
God.
Always remember that, that we'd gone to the underprivileged London Borough of Brent.
Trip.
Trip.
Yeah.
And the other thing I'll always remember, and there is a chance he'll hear this, is about that same time, I was about 10, the other huge thing was the Tutankhamun exhibition
oh,
at the
yeah,
British
yeah.
Museum. And we had this wonderful inspirational teacher called Mr. Weber, who now I think about it was only about 25, so he's yeah. only about 65 now. So. And everyone was told to bring in a packed lunch and a pound so that we could go to the exhibition.
Wow.
And we had to get up really early. And then we went to Madame Swords. And then we went boating on the Serpentine.
Wow.
And I didn't have a pound.
Yeah.
My mum couldn't give it to me. And I remember sort of not actually crying, but thinking, oh, I can't go.
Yeah.
And I told Mr. Weber, and he paid my pound.
Oh.
And I will never ever forget that.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
kindnesses like that.
Yeah.
Because the other thing from those days, you're making me remember this, I suppose the whole idea, isn't it, is, again, abject poverty, father off work, living on benefits, taking the, we used to get these DHSS clothing vouchers that we took to the co-op on the Edgware Road they used to overlook. Sounds like a Four Yorkshiremen sketch, because I know that most of your guests are sort of much younger and not quite as poor. But I suppose this makes it.
I think poverty's changed.
Yeah.
My mum grew up extremely
yeah,
poor.
I'm sure.
Her family from the East End, and they moved to Essex. And some of the stories she tells sound like jokes.
Yeah.
You just think, no, that's not what happened. Like, they were so poor that they had one egg when the family sat down for like Sunday tea, and it would be sliced up between, you know, mum, dad, her and her two brothers, and she would get the top bit with the white. So she Ooh. Hadn't tasted an egg yolk. So she was about 12 or something, she said, because her dad got the bit with the egg yolk, and then her brothers got the like little bit, and they would all fight, and she'd get the top end of the white, and that was Sunday tea.
No, quite. I mean, my wife, not so much now because she believes it, she'd go, no, I'm not. What were you brought up in the 1930s?
Yeah, but yeah, there was some extreme, especially in London, of course.
Yeah, well,
so you sort of found your way out of this poverty, which is incredible, especially, you know, London is a hard city to do that in sometimes. And so did you get a phone call to say he'd died or?
Oh, God, no. I mean, it just went on for years and years and years. And he'd be fine for a while. And I'll get older and older.
Yeah.
And
so you're 31.
Yeah. I mean, before that, I mean, the things that used to happen. I remember my older sister Celia came. She came over to see him, and as she got to the house, she goes, Mrs. Ryder across the road comes running out and goes, because again there was no text, no mobile phone. So she'd come up from the West End and she'd come to visit him because he hadn't been well. She goes, "Oh, your dad's been carted off to the Royal Free in an ambulance." Celia goes, "Oh God, has Mum gone with him?" And Mrs. Ryder goes, "No, she's gone to bingo with your nan." So we became sort of inured to it.
Yeah.
And
so was he in a hospital at the end?
Yeah, I've been to every hospital in London.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
he was in Hammersmith, he was in the Royal Free, Northwick Park in Harrow. There were loads of them he was in. But I just remember one time he'd become quite frail, and clearly the end was nigh. And I looked at him and I said, "Is there anything I can do for you?" You know. You know, and he said, "Yeah, I knew what was coming. I'd like it if you could take me to Mass on a Sunday. So I looked at him and thought, 4 weeks, 6 weeks tops, I'll have to do this. 2 years. Wherever I woke up in London, or with whom, got to take me dad to mass.
On a Sunday.
And I did.
Oh, my God, that's
and
amazing.
I quite enjoyed it. A, it made him so happy.
Yeah.
And the other thing is I'd take him in.
He was really devout, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, sit him down, then go outside and read the papers in the car. Then when the people came out of mass, I would just go and bring him home. When he died, I mean, just gradually, and as I looked at him, more and more, I just thought, oh, just please, you know, like so many people do. If I could have my dad back, yeah. even in the way he was like 4 or 5 years ago, you know, walking to mass,
yeah.
being perfectly good. But he was just, there was, and also I think his faith deserted him.
Oh.
And I had two feelings about this. One, it was a shame. You've devoted your life to Christ and Our Lady, and you've had a pretty raw deal. And on the other hand, you know, he felt, I remember him saying that he felt Our Lady had let him down. But then you think, well, A, she probably don't exist.
Yeah.
And B, why should you have special treatment? You know, but anyway, he died, and it was a bit of a relief. I was buying some records in Notting Hill Gate, and my brother-in-law, Trevor, rang me up. And I was quite relieved. And I do remember going to see him in the funeral parlour. And I wish I hadn't, because
oh, really?
I hadn't noticed, as you don't, but from his, you know, dressed him up in his best suit and his shirt and tie, he'd lost about 4.5 stone.
Yeah.
So he looked like so diminished. So I just, it's always up to people get comfort in different ways.
I think it's a very personal thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes
you're not right,
say,
you're not wrong.
Yeah, and sometimes people say seeing the body was absolutely amazing and gave them closure. And yeah, mm-hmm. and then, yeah.
I think that's if somebody's killed or somebody you haven't seen. For I see him all the time. And the other thing I am with death, and the same with my mum, is I always think that there's an old saying that it's easier to carry sorrow than guilt. And there's plenty to be sorrowful about when somebody dies, but you don't want to have had that row.
Yeah.
Or not even the row, just didn't seem, I did everything I could. Everything I could, I'm, you know, boasting now, for my parents when they were alive.
Yeah, yeah.
But once they died, I'm not interested. I don't visit their graves.
Hmm.
I mean, my dad's grave. Because the other thing that used to happen when we were a child is I and others used to profit from death like you wouldn't believe. Because in mass, they'd read out the list of the sick people. And Thomas O'Shea and John Murphy and this person and that person. And if they'd been on it for more than about 6 weeks, you think, oh, he's going to die. And we were altar servers, we were altar boys, and we used to get paid and get a morning off school, a ride in a limo and off to Kensal Green Cemetery.
Wow.
So, but then my dad was on the sick list and I thought, I bet those others are calculating that he's going to be dead soon. Well, they had a long wait. So I really don't visit them. And my dad's grave...
Is he buried in London?
Yeah. Kensal Green got full by the time he died.
Wow.
And it's now a sort of tourist attraction, Kensal Green Cemetery. I just go there all the time. They've been shipped out to Harrow, a place called Clamp Hill up the Harrow Road. And my dad's grave says, because my mum did it, she said, in memory of Patrick Burke, loving husband and dad. We went, Dad? Couldn't you put father? She goes, I was paying by the letter. And so it's like another 3 letters. But again, I never... And each time I go there with, you know, friends' parents dying, I always have a look. And all the people I knew as a kid, yeah, there's some more in there. My favourite one, I don't know why this appeals to me. My dad had a friend from the church, little fella called Jimmy Conceprio. And all his grave says, it's there to see in Clamp Hill, in loving memory of Jimmy Conceprio, born in London of Swiss parentage. That's all it says.
Wow.
You think, what? You know.
If you're paying by letter, that's a lot to get in, the Swiss parentage.
Yeah, I know. And the other one, I hate those euphemisms. I hate those, he's passed. There's another grave, and I can't remember the name. It's in love and memory of, you know, John Quinn, who fell asleep on Christmas Day. And I remember my friend Hillary going, we'll fall asleep on Christmas Day. There's nothing to fucking bury him. You know? It's just he died or in loving memory.
Yeah.
So I never visit there. I don't even know where my mother is.
Wow.
I think Caroline's got her, or half of her in an urn. Yeah. And the other thing, I don't wish to disabuse you, but a priest told me this. Shall I say it? When you get cremated, it's seldom the remains of your loved one.
Oh, I think it depends on where you are.
Yeah, it depends.
I've spoken to some cremators who are very, excuse the pun, hot on it.
Yeah, they're keeping the secret.
Yeah.
But I remember a busy day at Kensal Green, and they just scoop up an urnful of the whole mornings.
I mean,
but then it's, but my mother's death was quite different.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd. So your mum was much older?
Yeah, I mean, my mum only died, about 6 years ago.
Right, okay, yeah.
I felt sorry for my mum because, when you go in sickness and in health, you don't really mean it. And also, I think my mother had to endure the strain, the burden of being married to a good man. I mean, right. my father was regarded as practically saintly because he wasn't averse to a bit of argy-bargy, though. He had the fighting Irish in him, which he had to keep down. And my mum certainly did, And so she really had to care for him. Yeah, I know she went to bingo and things like that, but I don't think it was much fun for her having to make ends meet like that with five children.
God, I mean, especially in that day and age.
Yeah, exactly.
Must be a nightmare.
So when he finally died, a lot of my family lived on this estate. We all lived not far from the Edgware Road when I was a child. It was lovely. But gradually people get dispersed, and my Uncle Norman was the first to go. He went down to Herne Bay. They went down to Herne Bay, Margate, Broadstairs, down there. And they lived on an estate called the Clitter House Estate. Mm-hmm. Look it up, between Brent Cross and Kilburn. And a lot of my family lived there. And gradually they all moved away. And my mum was the last one to go. And they established a sort of Clitter House on Sea down in, and it was just like when I was a child.
Wow.
And my mum had a whale of a time. And I remember my sister Susan, we don't know where we got her from. She's lovely. She's like the middle class child.
Right.
And I think
Do you mean you literally don't know where she got her from?
No, I mean, she looks just like my dad.
Right.
So she's clearly the right, but she spent most of her childhood bewildered how she could have been born into this family.
Yeah.
Caroline and I and the others dealt with it a bit better, but Susan did. And I remember she went down to Broadstairs. She comes back, it's a nightmare. She's out drinking with Norman and Bert, that's her brothers. She's a largal out, she's out of control. And we used to go
she's
down.
She's obviously
having a great time. So I like that. She had her little bungalow down there. And I used to take the kids down there. I remember taking my children and Eleanor. My daughter, I've got two kids, Jack and Eleanor. Jack was very good because boys are a rarity in my family.
Yeah.
And my mum adored, just because she's got like 80% of her descendants are girls.
Wow.
So Jack was, my boy.
Yeah.
And I said to Eleanor, we're going down to see Nan. And she goes, I've got a play date with Chloe. And I gave her a bollocking. I just said, come on. Jack goes all the time. You never go down.
Yeah.
So we left and we just got to Muswell Hill Broadway. Phone rings. Oh. Can you come back and get me? I'd like to. So we came down. And she had the best time because she's actually just like her.
Yeah.
And Nan was cheating at cards and putting bets on the horses. And then we went down to the beach and we had ice cream, in in Morelli's in...
The best ice cream parlour.
So we went to Morelli's.
Morelli's is so good.
So you know it.
I do. Of course, because my family are from Essex, so they used to all go to Broadstairs.
So we went to Morelli's and we had lovely ice cream. We came back and she goes, do you want a biscuit? I said, oh, Mum, I just had an ice cream. You shut your noise. She goes, yeah. He's in Nan's house now. He does as he's told. And they're going, yeah, Nan's your mum. And Eleanor came back and said, oh, my God, Nan's all... Eleanor's about 12, 13 then. Yeah. She goes, oh, Nan's awesome. She's brilliant. Can we go down again? And 2 weeks later, she died.
Oh. Well, at least they had that weekend.
Mm. And it was a quick death. Yeah, my mum just conked out.
What was it, her heart or...?
Well, Anita, who lived down there, my sister, said that... My mum used to drink a lot. You know, she used to...
She enjoyed herself.
Oh, yeah.
That's what my relatives
and,
said.
Yeah, she'd be drunk between 4 and 7. She'd sober up for EastEnders. So you never used to ring up between 4 and 7. And Anita said that she'd been to the hospital and the old kidneys were packing up.
Right.
And I think the next stop was dialysis. Well, it'd be typical of my mum to just stop taking her tablets. That's probably what she did.
Yeah.
And she was... Same age as the Queen, she was 86 or something. So, what's wrong with that? You know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I do feel incredibly fortunate. I know this sounds so wrong that I was spared the. Oh, should we put her in a home? What we're going to do?
Yeah,
You know, neither of my parents had dementia. My dad did have a long lingering illness, but my mum was there and we were all there, so it didn't really affect me. But the worst one. Really, a few years after that was, it's just like a roll call of death, was my father-in-law.
Oh, right.
Because the thing with my dad being sort of physically diminished and so devoutly Catholic, I absolutely loved him. I really loved him because he remains the most kind, sort of most genuine man I've ever met. And a wonderful example. I remember thinking I never took any notice of him, but I remember he used to say to me... it's a shame because he never met any of his... Well, not any of his grandchildren. He only met a couple of them. Didn't meet any of mine. And he's just said, never send a child to bed unhappy and never break a promise to a child.
Wow.
And those little things...
In that day and age when it was much harsher parenting.
Oh, God. I mean, my dad, when I think about it, was a new man.
He
really was.
Sensitive.
He wasn't in the... Yeah, he really was sensitive like that. And my sisters adored him. I think he was the loveliest dad for daughters.
Right, yeah.
And not such an example to a son. My mum was the other way around. My wife put it very well. She said, your mum should have had one, instead of one boy and four girls, she should have had one girl and four boys.
Yeah.
And I remember she said, I don't know why it makes me laugh. She goes, all like Ray Winston or Ray Burdiss, you know, who we met. All like Ray. Hello, Ma, got you a bit of gear here. And she said, all eating apples. And I don't know why that's funny, but it is. But
Some boys to run her.
So what happened with my dad being that sort of person is I always, and I still do, and I'm getting a bit old for it now, I always looked for older male role models.
Right, yeah.
I mean, my uncles, probably not. And so I always, like a couple of girls I went out with when I was younger, I really liked their dads.
Yeah.
There's nothing special about them. They were just ordinary dads, really nice. But one was a bank manager, and I think another one ran his own business, and they played golf, and they were just like just normal dads. And I didn't have that.
I suppose again, it comes back like we're talking about that the sickness and not being acknowledged in a way that perhaps it would be now of like what that does if someone's ill and sick for a very long time, and that. Yeah, you do have to grow up a bit quicker, and you do have to carry a bit more burden, and perhaps you were seeking.
Yeah.
Someone healthy.
And the reason I stole all that money is not because I was a criminal, because you'd think I'd be Richard Branson now. I'm not. I just wanted some money.
Yeah, you just couldn't
And I peaked then, you know. And once I was out in the world earning money and driving a car, I quit the criminal activities. But so my father-in-law, who was a good old boy, he was a naval officer, and he had he'd split up with his second wife. And my sister Celia, who also lives around the corner in Muswell Hill, that's all four of them mentioned now, all name checked. Celia lives around the corner in Muswell Hill. And on the back of her house, she's got this little granny flat. And we said, why don't you move in there for a few weeks till you sort yourself out? And he was there for 7 years.
Wow.
and he had a massive, great, big 1200cc motorbike.
Oh, my God.
I think you know where this is going.
Yeah.
He was on a biking trip.
Wow.
No one knows what happened. Came round the bend, and they said, you know, they sort of got a bit further down. Where's Philip? And they came round, and he'd crashed. And you know those black and white chevron signs as you go round a bend?
Yeah, yeah.
Gone under there, broke his neck, dead.
Oh, my God.
And that was the worst death for me, weirdly. And I couldn't start sobbing and breaking down because it wasn't my death. It was my wife, so I had to be strong to
but
support her.
Do you think, as ever, we talked about on the show before, the distance allowed you to finally perhaps grieve for your dad in a way, or your mum in that way, of that you, somebody, that
this,
little bit of
this was before
space.
My dad, before my mum died, it was
oh,
in between
sorry.
The two.
Yeah.
It's weird because I don't know whether I sound sentimental, soft and kind, or as hard as nails, probably a bit. I don't really miss, I miss my dad a bit at Christmas.
Mm.
I'd like him to have seen my children, who are divine, and he would have loved them. But I don't really miss them. My dad or my mum did not leave a big hole in my life. Mm. I never sought advice from either of them. The only advice I remember from my mother, my dad's was that nice thing about the children.
Yeah.
My mum was, only a fool thinks the old Bill are stupid. Yeah, get you down the station. Unless you're some sort of master criminal, which you're not. And there was that advice, you know, they'll twist it, don't trust
yeah,
it.
Wow.
But no, I didn't, you know, some people, I've heard them on this, you know, they just, they
yeah,
were an inspiration, they
gap,
missed it,
yeah.
They, you know, they had someone to go to. So my father-in-law was much harder because I had to be strong to support my wife, but I was devastated. And then a couple of years after that, I'm still alive, ladies and gentlemen. I'm on my motorbike, coming down the road, and this woman the timing was like impeccable. As I'm passing her door, I could see her, you know, just her driver's door.
Yeah.
She decides to turn right without signalling.
Right.
I managed to avoid her, but I went, whoa, over the other side of the road, out of control, smashed into a parked car, you know. And when I got up, tried to stand up, I couldn't. My knee was... So someone called an ambulance, because it was quite like Evel Knievel, spectacular. So I get in the back of the ambulance and I said to my wife, hello, it's me. Listen, as you can hear, I'm perfectly all right.
Yeah.
But I'm in the back of an ambulance and I'm on my way to the Royal Free Hospital. What's happened? Come off my bike. I've done something to my leg. It's, you know, it's something. I've broken something. And I just heard her go, oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Eleanor, who's about 9, hears her going, oh, my God, oh, my God. And I said, she said, what's happened? Daddy's come off his motorbike. And I just heard, it'll make me cry at this day, oh, my God, my daddy, my no. No, because she associated
motorbike
with death.
Yeah.
She's going, no, it's just hurt his leg. But she just said it the wrong thing. Oh, dad's hurt his leg. He's got, you know, what happened? He came off. Just that way round, you know? That's why, again, as we've discussed before, language and words are so important.
Oh, so
important. So I'm in the rare position of knowing how my daughter would react if I died.
But, at least you definitely
cared.
Yeah,
but I didn't.
Do you think that's a generational thing? Or do you think that's a working class thing? Or is it just a personal thing? That your parents, like you said, it's not a hole that's left because in a way you had to be very independent.
It's a class thing.
Do you think it's a class thing?
It's a class thing. One of the girls I went out with did a similar job to me. She was a creative... Oh, that's such a self-regarding title. But she worked in the creative department of an advertising agency. I would go see my mum and dad. My mum would say, how's work? I'd go, fine.
Yeah.
My dad might even say, what are you working on? And I'd go, oh, Volkswagen, Barclaycard, whatever I was doing. I went up to see her. She was from a very middle class, you know, Wilmslow, Cheshire, Alderley Edge, posh bit where the Coronation Street football and Man United football
is.
She lived like, they're really nice people, her parents. And they said to her, how's work? She says, well, I'm working on this brief for this and that. And mum says, well, what I think you ought to do. And dad goes, well, no, maybe you should try the... And there's like group discussions breaking out.
Wow.
And again, I've taken more interest in my... No, it's a class thing. Because either you stay... Oh, this sounds so self-regarding. But either you stay in that class...
Yeah.
And you do what your dad did. Therefore, he could advise you. My dad didn't really... I still don't know what he did for a living. He worked on building sites. And it's a shame because he... The thing with my dad is... Back in those days, every week he'd get the Sunday Times and read it. And I think, well, if I'm a good writer, I suppose I must be. I I've only lived in it for all these years. My friend Brian pointed that out to me. He goes, oh, well, you know, you got your football results from the Sunday Times. So,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So I don't think he really was cut out for that sort of thing. He'd have made a brilliant priest, but then I really wouldn't have
Yeah, lived. Really wouldn't have
Yeah, but I think he was brought over here when he was 14. I mean, just the most horrible. Living on building sites. You know, they used to live there, sort of the Irish McAlpine's Fusiliers. He did all that. So, yeah, I didn't really learn anything. There was no career path.
And
my friends were the same.
There's an independence from your parents.
Yeah, completely.
And maybe, it's like you said, it's a class thing.
It's class thing.
Perhaps a
completely.
Generational thing as well, that maybe it is different now because everyone does talk about things more. But, like, I do, as I said, my mum comes from a very working class background, and I do know that. Like that, just like, yeah, it's fine. It's not just like, what's to discuss? Like,
no, exactly.
Works fine. End
yeah,
of story.
Just
like,
get on with it, you know.
Yeah.
And they never really understood what I did. No, actually, when I started writing ads, they understood because, you know, mine would come on the telly.
Yeah, that makes sense, doesn't it? You can go,
yeah.
Paul wrote that. We've heard
yeah,
it.
We've yeah, we've heard that. My dad's last job, actually, thinking about that, I was about 20 and I'm in the advertising agency, 21 maybe, and I wasn't a writer then. And this photographer came round with an art drawing to go, he'll do. What? I just had my hair cut very short. And they were doing this shoot about, and I need to dress up in 1930s clothes with short hair and a cap and those braces that came down to there. And I was in this ad, you know, black and white ad. It was all about whether you learn to drive in these cars and, you know, so there's me. And when I took my dad to his last job that I remember him having, he was a handyman, he had his little hut. And I went in and he'd torn the picture of me and just pinned it up on his wall.
That's
nothing
adorable.
Was said you know, so I think he probably was.
So I think it's interesting though, because like you said, it's not like it's not a lack of love, is it? It's not that at all.
No.
But it's just there's the need of that parent is very different.
Yeah,
I
very
suppose
different.
So when they die, you're dealing with different.
Yeah.
Your grief is very different because it's not like, oh my God, I don't know who will tell me what to do. You're like, I've been telling myself what to do since I was 9. So.
No, quite. They never had bank accounts. They couldn't advise me on my career, on my finances, on, well, women. I mean, you didn't discuss that.
Yeah,
the only weakness with my dad is, like with my son, when he was like 6 or 7, I wouldn't say, fucking hell, Jack. But now he's 23. Of course, I was like, fuck.
Yeah.
My dad never altered his. Mind you, he didn't say fuck to anyone.
Yeah,
so you were always a child. But
so your grief for your father-in-law, how did you work through that then? Was that much harder?
It was harder, actually.
Because you weren't used to sort of that those emotions attached to it.
Yeah, I wasn't used to those emotions. And you can sometimes feel worse for somebody else than you do for yourself.
Yeah, definitely.
So I felt terrible for my wife. And my kids who loved him. So my own grief had to take second backseat to that. Again, he didn't leave it. I didn't discuss my career with him, but I liked him and the kids liked him. And he was lovely with children. And, well, we lost a free babysitter as well. Because he would say, can't you go out Thursday? Isn't there a film you want to go and see? So he could come round and deal with the kids. I mean, my mother adored my children, but she had so many, so many grandchildren, you know, that, and also she lived, at the time, she lived down in Clitterhouse-on-Sea, of course. There's different ways of it. But I just think I'm quite sanguine about death. I'm not saying the death, again, that Irish Catholic thing, someone was always dying.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, you know.
Death was present.
Death was present at all times, especially when I was an altar boy. I looked forward to death so I could go to Kensal Green Cemetery. There was always someone dying. You know, I mean, some bloke literally fell off the back of a lorry. You know, it was that sort of thing. People were always dying.
And I wonder if that generational thing as well of like it being so present, it wasn't such a shock.
No, it wasn't such a shock.
It was like, oh, so-and-so died. Oh, well, anyway, what we have for dinner. Like, and I think, especially perhaps, maybe it is a classic. When it becomes further away from you, death becomes further away. And so then when it happens, it's such a shock. Whereas I think when you are living in that, like, that different generation, and you said, like, the Irish Catholic background, it's just there. So it's not such a big deal.
I'm always amazed to meet people. Middle-aged people in their 40s who've never been to a funeral.
I find them astounding.
So do,
they're like unicorns.
I've been to, it's been a bit of a bumper year. I've been to about 7 or 8 already this year.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't tell you how many I've been to in my life. It's so many.
No, so many.
Yeah.
And also, I've got a thing, maybe it's to do with me, I don't know, what it's to do with. But I always think if you can go, you should.
Yeah, yeah.
It's about lending support, paying your respects, sometimes celebrating life. If you want, people want you to wear a jazzy Hawaiian shirt, then do that.
I also think it's about acknowledging that death is a thing.
Yeah.
And I think when you avoid it, or, you know, by whatever reasons, or, if you can go, there's something in your brain and your constitution that's like, yeah, I will die. People will die. That's what life is about this.
The horrible thing is, you know, I remember someone saying, it's true, you're dying from the moment you're born.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the only guaranteed thing that we're all going to happen to us.
Yeah, and just, try and enjoy yourself. I'm not saying you shouldn't be religious, but just in case there's no afterlife, try and enjoy yourself before death. No, don't bank on that. I mean, if I don't want to die now. I'm in good health. But if I did, God, it's been great. Turned out far better than I thought. Got a lovely wife, gorgeous children. It turned out far better than when I was little. And you know, my child is it's sort of in black and white. You know,
yeah.
I just think, I've got to make it on my own. And it's weird with money as well, because we had no money. It can usually take you two ways. Either you're very flash and very naff because you had nothing when you were, or you hoard it because you're terrified. For me, it's somewhere in between, in that I don't like it. I'm quite anxious about it. I don't like bank statements. I know that in my life, I can walk out and buy a nice new jacket, but I can't buy a nice new Jaguar.
Yeah, yeah.
And somewhere in between, it tends to work, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It has all those effects on you. But the first time, it just occurred to me, that people say, what was the happiest day? This has nothing to do with death. Well, it sort of is, because my dad was very, very, very sick. It was in the depths of, you know, poverty. And people say, what was the happiest day of your life? My sister Anita and Trevor, they were very good to us. My sister Anita got married when she was about 19 and moved out to Essex. As they did, moved out to Harlow. And they were over one day visiting my dad. And there was a rally chopper, second-hand one, outside. Oh, that's weird. Who's come round our house in a chopper? Still didn't occur to me. I went in. And I said, who's that bike outside? Trevor, is it yours? You're a bit old for that. And Anita said, no, it's yours.
Yeah.
I said, what, can I borrow it? They said, no, it's yours. And apparently it seemed like a fortune. They'd paid 20 quid for it. Someone at Trevor's work was selling it. They bought it for me. And so I got on it and I couldn't believe it. And I drove it round the estate. And then I started to cry and I stopped and I'm sobbing And I couldn't understand. I thought, yes, you cry if someone punches you in the face. Yes, you cry if someone dies. Why am I crying? This is the best thing that's ever happened to me in my life. And then I understood. It was a really weird emotion for a 10-year-old child. Yeah. And people always say, what's happiest day of life? How about the birth of your kids? Well, no, not really. That was no great surprise. The 9 months beforehand were a bit of a clue. That remains the happiest day of my life. It made me cry, and it's sort of linked to, not death, but the poverty that ensued after my dad became sick. No, I think about it to this day.
Well, I think that is the loveliest image of a small boy realising that perhaps there is some fun to be had on a rally chopper when your life has been pretty tough.
Wish I'd kept it.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for coming to talk to me about your
mum and dad. Thank you so much. You're great. You've got stuff out of me that I'd forgotten I even thought. So thank you.
Thank you. You can follow Paul on Twitter at Paul Burke Radio, and you can find more information about his work at paulburkeradio.com. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast, and you can email thegriefcast@gmail.com. The show was edited by Kate Holland with thanks to Whistledown Studios, and the music was provided by the Glue Ensemble. And remember, you are not alone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.